Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DB Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DB Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
The following includes conversation relating to cryptocurrency. The information provided and discussed is strictly for educational and informational purposes only. Any use of any information is done so at your own risk. DV Radio LLC, as well as the hosts and guests of the show, take no responsibility if you wish to use any of the information in your daily life. Again, the topics discussed are strictly for informational and educational purposes only.
I am Chris, the CEO.
My name is Paul, I'm the COO.
I am Chris, aka Little Chris, the Chief Technical Officer.
My name is Zach, I'm the Chief Marketing Officer, better known as the WEN Marketing Officer, because it never gets done, right?
Of Finity Innovation LLC. Our long show, we will talk about Finity, crypto in general, DeFi, blockchain technology, and just talk about anything, whatever the hell we feel like talking about.
Get to know us at a little more personal level.
Babbling nonsense.
Love these guys.
Show me the money!
Show me the money!
Good morning and welcome to another Affinity Protocol podcast right here on WDVRDVRadio.net. And as always, we have with us the entire Affinity crew. We have Paul, Zach, Little Chris, and myself. So good morning. Thank you for coming and listening. So it's been a crazy week in the crypto market. Looks like we hopefully are coming into a bull run. Let's cross our fingers after a very, very long late fall, winter. It's been an awful time for, crypto in general, actually stock market, kind of everywhere. Inflation has been bad, a lot of news affecting things. So let's hope this is the beginning of some great things to come. So
crypto market can follow along and start going up.
Yeah, hopefully. Man, it's been a long winter. Fall was absolutely abysmal after what we stopped falling in December, and it's just been
it was
not a great market.
It was almost bad from the get-go because, you remember that we originally with our token started out with the SafeEarn and SafeVault reflections, and a month in there was some stuff that happened with one of those projects, and then there was some stuff that happened with projects that they were reflecting, and then It just kind of turned into the downtrend of the market. And we've sat there and we've come up and we've still done really, really well, but man, it's been rough.
You can't forget about the creeper ADA though.
That's true.
Yeah, it went on a nice little run.
It did. It was no complaints at all. All those people that have been accumulating those rewards and not selling them off, hoping that it's coming up, is trying to make a pretty decent penny off of it.
Yeah, it's
awesome. Which you like to see.
What diversification is all about, my man.
Exactly. One project goes up and another one goes down, you're still making some money. That's all it is.
By the way, anybody,
that's all it is.
Anybody got anything interesting going on this week or happened this week or anything like that? I know it's been a crazy week for me personally. Nothing out of the ordinary, nothing crazy. Obviously with Affinity, we launched the SafeMoon staking pool, which is awesome. I think we're approaching 80 billion Affinity token staked in that pool at this point, which is pretty wild. So happy to see that.
Damn.
And further development on the app and a lot of good things going on. So
don't forget to mention 62% of our circulating supply is staked.
Yeah,
that's insane.
That's something
I should also bring up though, that for Affinity Friday, did I say it was 17 billion that was still staked in auto crypto, or did I say 13? I can't remember.
I think you might have said 17, because I think there was at that time. I think there's 12 or so now.
There are 14. So anyone listening, you staked in auto crypto, that staking pool has ended. There is still 14.4 billion affinity staked in the auto crypto pool, which is not earning you a single penny.
No, no. You will still get your reflections if you're sitting in there of ADA and BUSD, but you will no longer receive any auto crypto. So make sure you get that out of there. There's no worry or risk of it going away. We'll leave that up there. You can unstake for, you know, probably at least the next few weeks. We're going to leave it up there, obviously, until everything's out and empty, but try to get out there as soon as possible.
Yep, it's not earning you anything right there. You can be moving that over to our new partner for staking SafeMoon and get some SafeMoon reflections, or you can be getting some more affinity. Up to you. Before we get too off topic, though, you know, last episode, we had a lot of fun. It actually went really, really fast. We got done with that hour and we couldn't believe they had already gone by. So I don't want to spend too much time not going over the stuff that we wanted to talk about today, because we're going to blink and it's going to be an hour and we're not going to have touched on damn near anything that we wanted to talk about. So as most everybody knows, we absolutely love the education piece when it comes to crypto and investing your money to get into crypto and all that fun stuff. So, you know, Chris, you're the resident expert in it, but I wanted to talk a little bit about smart contracts on today's episode. Obviously, we're not going to have the whole podcast focus on that, but, you know, we can at least talk about some of the basics of smart contracts, you know, the token interaction and how their smart contract calls in DApp browsers, how those functions work. A little bit of just an overview of smart contracts for anyone that's sitting on the side that is looking at investing, but they're really not sure what a smart contract is. They go into a DApp browser or trust wallet and they see a smart contract call and they just see how much money it costs. They really not know what's happening behind the scenes or underneath the hood or what's going down on the blockchain when it comes to smart contracts. So anywhere you want to start in there, just get a little general overview.
And that's correct, man, right? So when we're talking about smart contracts, and we like to do educational pieces, you know, during this podcast, and anytime we can, we want to make sure we educate the masses. And when it comes to contracts, I don't know how many people really understand it, that are even, you know, investing in crypto on the daily, what the difference might be between an actual coin and a token, and when we talk about altcoins and all this other good stuff. So anytime you see the word token, you should associate that with a smart contract. And a coin is typically, and I know a lot of people use that term incorrectly when they refer to tokens that run on a smart contract as coins, but realistically, it's supposed to be a coin is its own native asset on its own blockchain. For example, Bitcoin, Ethereum, BNB, those are coins. They are on their own blockchain. They own the blockchain. That is their native currency. Anything that is a token utilizing a smart contract is an asset that is riding on that blockchain's network. We are utilizing the BNB network with Affinity. We are a token using a smart contract. So that is the major difference between the two. And it's kind of important to note that because there is no contract associated with a native token. It's just the asset on the blockchain. So really, what is a smart contract? It's you know, software coded in Solidity, at least on BSC and Ethereum and anything in those networks, that has a bunch of functions in there that tell that currency how to act, how to react when somebody's trading it and doing whatever else they're doing with it. One of the easiest ways to look at it is look at it like maybe a blockchain is sort of like the Microsoft operating system, right? They're the underlying root of what everything else gets installed onto. So look at, say, and I'm going to go back to BSC because that's what we're on. So the BSC network, look at it kind of like the Microsoft operating system. They have all their things going on under the hood, but they are the underlying asset. And then every smart contract, you could kind of look at it as software that's installed onto your Windows operating system that have their own unique functions and features, but they interact with the Microsoft operating system, like a smart contract interacts with the BSC smart chain. It's probably the easiest way to kind of think about it to somebody that's not really a techie, so to speak. But inside of that contract, there are functions that do different things. There are functions that allow fees and taxes, so to speak, to be changed or to be set. You know, if a contract needs to be paused for any reason, if there's something going on, there's things that allow rewards to be pushed out, and you know, the list goes on and on and on, depending on the contract. And those get called by the owner of the contract, which is typically the deploying wallet, whoever deployed that contract onto the network. So you can look at those right on BSC scan. You can see all that stuff. Everything's transparent on the blockchain. That's the great thing about it. That's also why it's important to actually, if you're curious and you're doing your own research, to maybe go take a peek at it, even if you're not really savvy on it. Some of that stuff is fairly easy to see and understand what's going on. But yeah, so anybody else got anything? You guys got any knowledge you want to push on that? Or you got any questions that maybe I can kind of answer? I don't want to drone on too much about smart contracts, but there is a lot to it. But that's really the basis of it. That's something that really needs to be understood. And I think one of the things that are sort of lacking is even the quote unquote developers that are pushing out these smart contracts don't even necessarily know how they work. There's a lot of outsourcing that happens. They deploy it and then they really don't know how to make it function. And that's another problem that exists that we can talk all day on that exists in the DeFi space right now.
So, yeah, and it's all excellent information. So I had a couple of points to bring up on that as well. One of which is that, just like you said, you know, some people just aren't all that tech savvy when it comes to it, which is absolutely fine. But there's less necessarily necessity to know a specific programming language versus understanding programming logic. So you don't have to necessarily say, well, hey, I feel like I need to learn Python, or I need to learn JavaScript, or I need to learn C++ or some other programming language. Yep. In order to kind of find out what a smart contract is doing. As long as you can understand a bit of the programming logic behind it, most languages are set up so that you can kind of read what is happening and you can decipher what is really going on in the code without actually knowing the language. Now, obviously, in order to get syntax correct and make sure that things are working how they should, you really should be pretty well versed in that programming language. But for the most part, if you can follow the logic, you can see exactly what is happening and you can read it with almost no programming experience. That doesn't mean that if you have no programming experience, you should try to fork a contract and change it to be how you want it to be, because you run a very, very, very serious risk of making something go horribly wrong, especially if you don't get it checked out by somebody else. But if you're looking to just kind of look at the contracts and kind of read what it's doing and get some more information, you know, you can just go in there and read it, and you can look at some of the basics of programming logic and follow it pretty decently. And like you said, it's all over the blockchain, and you can go to almost any project and you can see their contract in its entirety. You can see that most of them are going to end at a certain point because there is a maximum size before you have to call, and you have that contract call another contract. And, you know, we don't have to get into the complicated nature of that, but it's all there. And I encourage people to go read it, compare other contracts, look at and see what people are doing similar, what people are doing different. You know, you look at some of the pioneers of smart contracts and how things have gone very well or very horribly wrong. You know, it just comes back to that, having the correct syntax and having the correct, having the correct syntax and the correct logic to go in with it. And that makes a successful project.
Yeah. And that's really what makes DeFi DeFi is, you know, not only the blockchains themselves, which, you know, obviously there's a lot of them out there, but there's way, way more smart contracts than there are blockchains. So that's what really kind of makes it DeFi is launching a smart contract on that chain and allowing the people that are interacting with it and letting the people that are interacting with that contract on the chain really handle itself. So when you're talking about any kind of use case or project that's launching any software or anything, if they're not utilizing smart contract technology, it is not DeFi. It cannot be decentralized. There's a lot of things out there that are being launched and maybe they're running completely on AWS or Azure or something like that. And then with a typical Web2 interface or mobile app interface, and there's really no interaction with a smart contract, that's not decentralized. That's still subject to a third-party entity just coming in and shutting it down. So make sure when you're doing your research on anything that's going on, you understand the difference between the two. And if you don't, just do some research. It's not hard to find, but.
Exactly. Education is key in here. Absolutely key in here. So the last part of smart contracts that I wanted to ask you specifically about, Chris, because, you know, like I said, you know a lot about this stuff. So let's talk about a dApp browser and using that interface on whatever wallet of choice there is, calling a smart contract. So it brings up that page and it says you're calling a smart contract.
Yep.
And it says it's going to cost X amount of dollars or whatever currency is native to you. What exactly is that doing? I know you talked about how it's calling a function.
Yep. No, that's a great point because of the gas. That's everybody's bane of existence is gas fees, especially if you're on Ethereum network, right? So gas fees are something that you cannot get around. We can't get around. Nobody can get around as long as you are using that network. Look at it as the fee to utilize anything that's happening on that network. So if you are interacting with any contract that's on that network, you can't get around it. That's their fee. That's why they call it a gas fee. It's basically being able to traverse their network. You need to pay X fee. So what happens with a dApp is on the front end of that, what you're seeing, which is known as the user interface, or you'll sometimes hear it called a UI, is interaction with either buttons or text fields or what have you. And when you execute that, if it's programmed correctly, should be calling a function on a contract that is on the whatever blockchain that you're using. So if, say, you're on RDApp, for instance, and you are claiming your rewards, when you hit that button to claim rewards, you are calling a function on our contract to then match your wallet that you connected already and pull all the rewards back to your wallet. When you get that first prompt, it's prompting you to pay the gas fee because you're calling a function to utilize something on the BSC chain. And there's no way around those gas fees. So that's really what's happening. You are actually calling a function through a different interface. You can go directly to the contract and do the same thing. But to make it easier, projects will create dApps to make it more user-friendly and increase the experience and make everything look pretty and everything for you. So in reality, all you're doing is calling functions on the contract.
Calling function on a contract, easier way of seeing it. Absolutely perfect. So someone gets their money and they say, I want to go buy some token or I want to go buy some coin, whatever the hell it is.
Got to buy some affinity.
Well, after they get done buying some affinity blindly because they love us. But so, well, actually, you know what? Let's put it that way. You know, someone blindly buys into any project, right? What kind of risk are they going with? Like, Zach, I know that you've been well-versed in the crypto world for a while now and stuff like that. And I know that you calculate risk very, very carefully. I know you and little Chris as well, you guys are constantly looking at different projects that you might want to jump into and stuff like that. What are you looking at when you're looking at a risk factor for a token or a project investment when it comes to crypto?
Personally, myself, and I have an extremely, extremely strict trading plan. I mean, it's gotten me to this point, so I'm thankful. I've actually only been rugged once, and it was a honeypot. Wasn't even a rug. So I guess I'm thankful for that. But nonetheless, you know, to me, just like anything else, it comes down to the team, and even. You know, just like Chris, I did do more stock market work than anything before crypto. And especially with a company, like you need to know who's running the company. You need to know the financials of the company. Like all of this stuff really matters at the end of the day. And if I can't see that and I don't see that transparency out of an even just a project, again, we preach it all the time. It's some type of centralization to decentralization, right? And that comes with just as simple as the team being transparent and on point. Personally, that's my biggest factor. If the team is good, then I will look at the product, and from the product, I will look at everything else. That's just in crypto, though.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I'm actually glad you brought up stock trading as well, because one of the things that we wanted to bring up today was risk of non-equity investments. And right now, there's a lot of talk in the crypto world about investing in something that does or does not provide equity in a company. There are multiple projects, you know, going over and having issues with the SEC. I mean, I think XRP is one of them that's actually just, they came to an agreement with the SEC or something like that. I can't remember exactly in the article that I saw, but there's lots and lots of projects that are running into some of these issues about investing versus buying a crypto. Yeah. Chris, I know that you have a lot more business savvy. I know you got plenty to talk about.
Yeah, XRP is obviously the most notable. They're kind of going to set the stage for this, but I think that's a huge misnomer when we're talking about crypto versus equity investing. I think a lot of people, because of the nature of how crypto is traded, kind of look at it almost the same, right? And they're not the same. There is a difference between owning and holding a token or a coin and holding stock in a true equity share in a company. When you're holding a token or a coin, you don't have equity share in the company. You have a share of the value of that currency. That's kind of where it begins and ends. So when we're looking at a lot of these projects out there and companies and et cetera, when they're developing things, you have to make sure that when they're developing, they're doing it in a way that's actually going to promote the use of that currency or promote the the future value of that currency, because you're not necessarily subject to or have any kind of voting rights or anything like that in that company by holding the token. And when you look at the team, we talked about the team behind it. Zach mentioned it, which is extremely important when you're doing any kind of research or anything like that. We have, I love our team. My opinion, and I'm very, very biased, it's hands down the best full team of any project, including some of these large coins, anything like that. We have an amazing team behind us. And, you got to make sure that you look at that kind of thing. You got to make sure that when you're also maybe not so happy with the team, you have to remember, you do not have voting rights or equity share in that company. So if you're not happy with that, you're going to have to just make your own decision and either move on or continue down that road. You can speak up. Everybody's got their own opinion. You can do what you want, but understand that. And, understand that the team in crypto is potentially even more, I don't want to say more important, but has a bigger impact on price action than even some equity companies out there. So when you're looking at who's coming, who's going, who you want, who you don't want, if you were to lose somebody, which this team, we're rock solid and nobody's going nowhere. I won't let them. You have to understand the impact that can have, not just long term, not just short term, but long term. So think about all these things when you're investing and do your own research. There's a lot of great things out there. And also, I do want to mention this too. Change is not always a bad thing. Sometimes change is necessary. So don't jump to conclusions. If you see change happening, it could be a really, really good thing. So I don't want to speak to, we want to keep things upbeat and positive here. It's not always negative. Sometimes change is a really good thing, but you just have to wait and see. But the bottom line is there is a massive difference between holding a token or a coin and an equity investment in a company.
And you brought up two big things that I wanted to talk about as well, right? So I'm going to lose them if I don't say them immediately. So first and foremost, just like you said, change isn't always a bad thing, right? Look at when Dorsey left or decided that he was going to announce that he was going to step down from Twitter. Do you know what happened to the Twitter stock immediately after that?
I didn't take a look, but I'm assuming that it didn't do so well.
No, it did great. It went up 25%.
Wow.
So I believe that it had to do specifically a lot with some of the reasons that he said that he was going to step down. Is it obviously, you don't want to see a CEO stepping down saying talking trash on the company that they built or anything like that. But one thing he said that founders shouldn't have a say anymore. It has evolved past that. It has evolved past what I have determined Twitter to be, and it needs to get, put into the hands of the people and stuff like that. More of like what you were talking about with a crypto investor not really having a vote or anything like that. So, but then again, you said, well, long-term, what happens? Well, they actually still had a 14% loss posted for that year, even though they had a big surge. So if you have to think about it, like they were already not having a good time. And then Dorsey decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to step down. I'm going to let the company do what the company's going to do. And it surged up, but they still dealt with a 14% loss for the year. So short term, long term, change can be good, change can be bad. But just like you were saying, it all really comes down to the team. It really, really comes down to the team. And if you in crypto, you know, you don't have a vote with your feet. If you don't like what the project is doing on a personal level, or you think that the project should be doing something different and they've decided not to go in your particular direction, vote with your feet. You don't have to be there. You can take your money elsewhere. If you think that the team and you trust that the team is going to be doing something that is in the best interest of the majority of the holders, if you don't fall into that majority of the holders descriptor, then you don't have to be there. Simple as that. There's no reason to sit there and say, oh, well, they're not doing what I want to do, so I'm going to talk mad shit. Fuck this project. You know, you see it all too often. If they're not doing what you want to do, hopefully you're up and you can take your earnings, you can take your profits elsewhere, or be a little bit more mature about it and say, you know what? This is their project. I might not agree with one facet of it, but they've made me money and I would like them to continue to make me money. And you stick around and see what happens. But you have to either be behind the team or at least know what the team is doing and what the team's intentions are before you can pass that judgment. And that's really, really important in a lot of this crypto stuff. You know, people talk about being doxxed or partially doxxed or not doxxed at all. And what's this person doing? Like, you know, I'm never ever, and I've said it before, I am never going to publicly share my Facebook because that just allows everyone to have
I don't even really use mine. So
I mean, I do to say happy birthday to people most of the time. You know, that's where I get the reminders, but you know, I don't feel like putting my Facebook at that publicly, but you know, my first name, you know, my last name, hell, my business card has my personal phone number on it. So if you're at Cryptopia, I've already been signed up for some bullshit text service or some shit like that, where every now and then I get told I need the Lord, probably because we were in Utah and I was cursing at the storm. I don't know. I wouldn't doubt it if someone heard that one was like, this man needs Jesus. Let me get his business card and sign his ass up.
Oh yeah.
But it's all knowing the team. How much is the team involved? How is the team doing when they talk about technical specifications of their project? How are they doing when they talk about the marketing side? And you know, you say that you're all about this team and you maybe tear up a little bit talking about how great we are. But but you know,
for real, I got my box of tissues over here.
There you go. But you know, we have a lot of really, really good stuff going for us. You have a significant outreach into the business side. Chris F is doing incredible things with the mobile app and doing all the technical stuff. Zach is crushing it on the marketing, who we're talking to, when we're talking to him. I haven't had a full day night off from crypto probably for the last few months, just because we're absolutely crushing it in all of those different areas. So it is really, really important that the team is active within not just their project, obviously, but with the community, and so that the community can see and have that access to what is going on straight from the horse's mouth.
Yep. Dead on, man. Dead on.
All right, I'll take a sip of coffee, and I muted myself because it's iced coffee and you would hear the ice jangling around in there.
I like this. I just picked up me a nice coffee too early for this, man.
Well, mine's in a metal cup, so.
My sleep schedule's been all screwed up. I know you can attest to this too, because I know you got some night shift shit going on. But you know, after Affinity Friday, I'm going to bed at 5 a.m. Saturday morning, I guess it would be. And then, you know, other things going on. And then have, you know, getting up at 8 this morning. And actually, right when we're done with this broadcast, I'm going to go make the family some Belgian waffles because they've been bugging me. So.
hold up. You got Belgian waffles, Doc?
Apparently I do. They went out and bought the stuff to make them last night. So that's what I'm going to be doing right after this.
I'm on my way. As soon as we get done, I'm driving over.
Let's do it, man.
You're only 15 minutes away, man. I'm having Belgian waffles. Fuck this. Yeah.
I don't know how you do it. The sleep schedule thing, it must be because you have kids, but I don't know. I can't do it anymore after the military.
What you talking about? Like, you don't have a sleep schedule, man.
Yeah, I don't.
I see you on and off at all times, man. No rhyme or reason.
Dude, it's rough, man. This transition back to overnights is fucking shaving some years off my life. I don't know. I haven't worked overnight since my son was very young. So it was pretty easy, because even during the day, you know, he's sleeping for the most part. And this time around, it's freaking brutal, man. Even last night, I think I didn't go to bed till 2:33, but I guess the wife had some trouble sleeping too. So when good old kid decided 6:15, sun's up, I'm up, let's fucking go, came rocketing in that room, man, it was all over. I was like, there needs to be coffee right fucking now, basically. Yeah. And then, you know, I gotta go into work tonight. So I gotta cross my fingers that, that he takes a good nap this afternoon, because your boy going to be napping right there with him. Cause I gotta be in at midnight, and we'll see how that goes. It's going to be rough.
Hey, good luck to you.
I got two monsters in the fridge. I'll be all right. All right. So now to get too off topic there. So, you know, we talk a lot about crypto leaders and investing in the team just as much as you're investing in the project, which is a very good thing that I think that Zach brought up. What are we looking at? What's up?
No, go ahead and say Zach brought up something good.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Zach brings up good stuff all the time. Yeah. You need to turn your hearing.
I need to turn this shit up.
So, let's talk scams and rug pulls, because Zach brought that one up too. So he's only been rugged a couple of times, or honeypotted and stuff like that. So there's scams all over crypto. And it is not limited to BSC. I know that there's a lot of scams on BSC. Maybe we only concentrate on the ones that are on the BSC network, because that's, you know, our native coin.
Yeah, well,
you know,
the biggest reason why so many are on BSC is, for one, the rate which it exploded, right? BSC just hit, when they dropped smart contracts, it exploded with, you know, the amount of people that were utilizing it. And because the gas fees are so significantly cheaper to Ethereum, yet the contracts are written exactly the same, it was easy for scammers to come and deploy for cheap money. Like, you can deploy a contract for like $8. So it was much cheaper as opposed to a few hundred on Ethereum. So you really have to be dedicated and have at least a little bit of money to deploy a scam on Ethereum, where BSC, it's really, really cheap. So
in your opinion, is that the reason that Ethereum is never going to die? Because, you know, you hear people every day talking about gas fees and Ethereum. You know, we bring up something like Adapt and how it can be great for Ethereum, because someone is so scared to make a transaction on Ethereum, not necessarily because, like, sure, I'm going to double check my wallet and stuff like that, but they don't want to not make the transaction because they're going to fuck up the wallet, but because they're going to fuck something up and lose a significantly high transaction fee. Yeah. But just like you brought up, obviously Ethereum is still going to have scams on, you know, just like people can say, oh, well, you know, Apple is so much better than Windows because, you know, no viruses, which is obviously a misnomer. There are plenty of viruses for Mac OSs, but
yeah,
you know, this the same thing. There's a significantly less chance that you're going to make an investment on the Ethereum network, because someone is going to have to put so much time, effort, and their own money up front just to deploy. Is that going to significantly decrease the amount of scams happening on that network? And is that why Ethereum hasn't died, even though they have ridiculously astronomically high gas fees?
I would say it contributes to it, in my opinion, right? But yeah, because that's also why people will trade a lot less too, right? You'll see a lot less day trading because the fees to get in and out, the gas fees alone to get in and out. People talk about the taxes on some of these, you know, tokens and stuff. Well, taxes on a $100, $200, $500 trade on a BSC, that's sometimes damn near the gas fees alone on Ethereum. So you see a lot less people just day trading. And like you said, yeah, we'll limit there. Don't get me wrong. There are still a lot of scams that happen on Ethereum as well. It's just less than BSC. For the reasons that we talked about. And also because it's an older network, over time, the gas went up considerably because of the amount of traffic that's on there. And I know they've been talking about launching V2 and all this other good stuff for quite a while now, you know, with that'll lower gas fees, and which is really why BSC came out. It was supposed to be like the Ethereum with lower gas fees. BSC is a fork of Ethereum. So, you know, it is really a gas issue. Plus a lot of we'll call it quote unquote old money is on Ethereum, which is why you see some of the projects that tend to explode. A lot of them are on Ethereum network, and a lot of that old money doesn't necessarily want to come over to BSC because of the risks of scams. And congratulations to Zach for only getting taken once. He's definitely in the minority of people that have been in and out of stuff because
you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Crazy world out there.
So question for the group, because you bring up Ethereum V2.
Yeah.
If they're going to lower gas fees for Ethereum V2, do you anticipate, because of the lower gas fees, that they're going to have an explosion like similar, not, it doesn't have to be the exact same, but something similar to Binance, where, you know, they drop smart contracts and they absolutely exploded. Is Ethereum V2 going to be ripe with scammers?
Yep.
Coming to it, if they're going to sit there and lower gas fees and basically, I don't want to necessarily become Binance, but do something similar to Binance where they have the Ethereum name, they have the lower gas fees. Are they going to have so many people flooding to it that they're going to have a crazy breakout that is going to have them be ripe with scams?
I believe
it's going to be worse.
Yeah.
It's going to be worse because everybody knows Ethereum. It's one like top two on most coin charts. You come up with smart contracts, lower fees. It's a breeding ground.
It'll definitely be interesting. I know that, and they've been talking about V2 for a while now. So it's not all like, yeah. And they're not dumb people. I guarantee they've thought about this. I'm anxious. I'll use that word. I am anxious to see what happens with an upcoming V2, because that would be my only fear is that, you know, Chris F, just like you said, it's going to be a breeding ground for people to come over and just start scamming. Because yeah, if I can go, you know, what's it to cost to deploy a contract on Ethereum right now? A few hundred dollars.
Yeah. Minimum. I've seen it as high as $1,000.
So, okay. So, you know, BSC $8, woohoo, super low. But even if, you know, Ethereum V2 comes out and it's $60-$65 to deploy a contract, because they still have, you know, some higher gas fee than normal, but not anywhere near their native huge gas fee. It's going to become a breeding ground. I mean, hell, I would not even, like, I don't want to say I wouldn't consider. It would take a lot for me to click that button to deploy a contract if it's going to cost me $1,000 versus $60. I'll throw $60 to deploy a contract, no problem.
Yeah.
So that's crazy. So how do we fix that? And, you know, how do you fix the honeypots? How do you fix the rug pulls? How do you fix, you know, everything in there? And we talked a bit about this last podcast about government regulation, government stepping in, people wanting that protection versus not wanting the intervention and stuff like that. So how do you get around it? I still to this day don't know what the answer is, but there is at least movement in the right direction.
Yeah.
Who has heard of Frosty NFTs?
Oh yeah, it's been all over the news the last couple of days.
Did you say Flavors NFTs?
Frosties, my man, Frosties. So
shit, I got excited. I thought they were coming back.
No, man.
Hey, before you get into that story, I do, because you talked about not knowing the answer, and that's absolutely correct, right? Nobody knows the answer right now, but we're moving in the right direction. The great part about that is we talk about Unite DeFi all the time. There are people out there, including obviously Affinity, that is going to continue to develop applications that are going to make things safer for everybody using blockchain technology. But there are other projects out there that are doing the same thing. So this is what we're talking about, collaboration and the bringing together of ideas and working together to make this happen. Nobody's going to do it on their own. So the more we can identify that these people are doing things that are making it safer and more secure for people, and then we can work together, we can all make things much, much better. And I know Affinity is going to lead the charge in many ways on that, and other projects as well. And we're going to strive to continue to work with others and do better for everybody.
And not only that, you talk about collaboration and stuff like that. And we're, you know, we're all military here, ex-military veterans, whatever you want to call it, you know, Chris, you retired. So like, I usually lean heavily towards the you police yourselves. And there are crypto projects out there that have dedicated their entire, like almost all of their resources to finding scam and shit projects and letting people know. And that is, honest to God, right there, in my opinion, the second line of defense. The first line of defense is that research portion that every single person should be doing before they get into a project. After 100%. That, you have some projects that just go out there and they find something wrong. And it's not that they're going out there and they're doing it nefarious reasons and they're finding legitimate projects and talking them down to promote their own or something like that. But there are projects out there that are just going out there to find rugs. I mean, look at you. Look at your name that you've had for a while now, Cryptorment. You did it because you went into different projects and you tormented the ones that were obvious scams, obvious rug pulls. And you basically went in there until you got banned from the community and you tormented them enough to let as many people know that it was a scam project, right?
Yep, exactly.
So we need to police ourselves. When policing ourselves doesn't work, the Department of Justice steps in. So I'm going to read a quick little excerpt from this article about Frosty's NFTs really quick. Another day, another NFT scam. This time it's a rug pull variety. So two men have been charged with conspiracy to commit wire fraud and money laundering after they made $1.1 million from a token project before abandoning it without fulfilling any of the promises they made and leaving buyers with nothing to show for their investments. Again, there's your risk of investment on a non-equity platform. It is not really an investment in the term, just like you said. The Department of Justice is charging these two assholes for allegedly running the Frosty's NFT project, which saw its 8,888 NFTs, each priced around $180, sell out within an hour of their public launch. So these dudes took a project and pushed it fucking hard. They, to sell out almost 9,000 NFTs within an hour, they had to have been bolstering a lot.
Yeah.
And as per usual, just like I was talking about, risk associated for investing in non-equity, just like other NFT collection, buyers were promised rewards such as metaverse game, giveaways, 3D versions of their avatars, etc. This was also the potential to make a lot of money by reselling the NFTs at a higher price. Everyone knows NFT marketplace is huge. But yep. After the initial sale was complete, all trace of Frosty's project vanished from the internet, including the Discord server, and buyers found they could only get a few dollars from the sale of their NFTs. So someone went in there, bought two NFTs, spent some money, immediately lost it. Because within an hour, everything sold out, and these guys close up shop, and it's gone.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah, and that's, there's a couple key points that you made there, too. One is, even though it's not equity, because that's going to be an ongoing conversation probably for at least the next couple of years about the, equity and tokens like we were talking about earlier. This NFT project, when you have an NFT, which is, a token, that's what it is, just like you have tokens in Affinity or anything else you own, it's an asset. So when somebody makes your asset worthless by doing something on their end nefarious, that is a crime. Okay. If your asset becomes worthless because it's just not performing, the company cannot be held liable because it's an asset created by the company. It's not, again, equity in the company. So the company can continue doing what it's doing and they're supposed to be doing the right thing and creating value in the right way. Again, you don't want the SEC breathing down your neck. So you got to make sure that you're careful on how you do things. But yes, the NFT was an asset. They purposefully made that asset worthless while heavily profiting themselves, which is a crime. Glad to see that somebody is finally getting tagged for this. Hopefully they get some prison time. That's just low life shit at its prime right there, man.
Absolutely. And before we say anything else about this, yeah, this article and this project, I do want to bring up because I've realized it does kind of sound like I'm talking shit on NFT projects, but I am reading the article word for word. So that's the article talking shit, not me. Yeah. We know that there are lots and lots of good NFT projects out in the crypto community. So I don't want to sit there and make it seem like we're saying that NFT projects are shit or anything like that, because there are a lot of great NFT giveaways that have solid roadmaps, that are delivering products, that are delivering things for their holders. that are doing great things. This just unfortunately happens to be one of those scams that comes up. But basically, these guys got caught by cross-referencing some IP information over with their Coinbase account information, stuff like that. They transferred about the $1.1 million in crypto they made from the scheme to various wallets in multiple transactions designed to obfuscate the source of funds. And here's where they fucked up. Even the article says that's usually where the story ends, but it seems the pair were emboldened by their success. They put together a follow-up series of NFTs called Embers that was supposed to launch in March. There was even a roadmap that promised donations to the Red Cross. 25% of funds from the mint would go to a community-controlled wallet, blah, blah, blah. Basically, this would have been another rug valued at about $1.5 million. So, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on me, right?
Yep.
That's just absolute shit. But here's the really, really good news. The accounts on the crypto exchange were linked to a Citibank credit card and government ID that enabled authorities to track them down, and both men now face up to 20 years in prison.
Good.
Bam. That's what we want to see.
Yes, that is, in my opinion, where the regulation needs to happen and pretty much end. Regulate the scams. And this is the kind of shit that will allow mass adoption that we talk about a lot actually prosper, because the more you can shake out and hold the scammers accountable, the more these bigger investors, companies, you know, businesses, and anybody else that's really going to push this forward are going to be able to come in or be willing to come in. Right now, it's a very scary place for them. You think about it as an individual, think about how scary it is for you to hit that button, hopefully using the Adapt Swap to go purchase whatever currency you want. A lot of times you're like, I don't know if it's, you know, whatever. Think about doing that as a company or somebody that's coming in with hundreds of thousands or potentially millions of dollars, how nerve-wracking that would be for them. So the more we can get this stuff fleshed out, the more we can see the crypto space grow.
And unfortunately, you know, it's never, ever, ever going to be gone.
No, absolutely
not. It just won't be. But you take an example, this Frosty's NFT and these two guys that are hopefully getting hooked up for it. These two guys get thrown in the box for 20 years apiece. It's going to make somebody else think twice before they hit deploy on that contract. It really will. It's not going to hit everybody. Obviously, there's going to be people that know how to protect themselves in an online world that aren't going to be making those mistakes, aren't going to, you know, have a Discord server initially registered with an IP address that's their actual IP address, obviously. Yep. But there's going to be, you know, like the typical like script kiddie that just finds a bad, good for them, but bad for everybody else, forked contract that says, I'm going to launch a project that is going to look at this, and they're going to see this example. If these guys get jail time or time in prison, whatever you want to call it, and they're going to hopefully be like, you know what? Maybe I don't want to do this. Yeah. Maybe it's not worth trying to take $1 million, which is not worth as much today as it was 20 years ago. You know, we were talking about that earlier too, but like, maybe they're going to be like, you know what? I could maybe get $1 million and get away with it, or I could go to prison for 20 years.
Yep.
Hopefully makes them think. Hopefully it does.
Yeah. And the other point I wanted to make on that, Paul, was the roadmap portion. This should also put some other projects and companies on notice that maybe you won't catch 20 years or whatever, but you know, it may be coming to a time where you're going to stop being held accountable by regulation, where if you're going to publish a roadmap, you're going to be held accountable to that roadmap, potentially legally. How many projects have we seen out there that launch and they have the same cookie cutter roadmap, right? I know Zach and I talk about this a lot, where you see NFT marketplace, you see metaverse, you see all the standard buzzwords and a roadmap. And then you're sitting there holding this thing for 3 to 6 months. And it's like, hey, when are you going to do anything?
Where's progress on anything that you said you're going to deliver?
Yeah, they're all over the place, all over. Every time I see a new project launch and I go to their website, I would probably say 80% of the time I go to their roadmap and it's like those buzzwords almost every single time.
And you're absolutely right. And that's a huge gray area though. And that's gotta be, that line has gotta be tiptoed around very, very carefully. Yes. Cause you can't just sit there and say that, you know, a company that says, hey, this is what we plan on doing versus what they actually have the technical ability to do, the financial ability to outsource, et cetera. That term roadmap is supposed to be, you know, a suggestion. This is what we are attempting to do. Not what we are guaranteed to deliver that. I mean, our roadmap has changed a little bit, right?
Yes.
You know, originally we were going to come out with a wallet and we decided, you know what? No, let's just make Adapt a standalone mobile application. So, I mean, yes and no, I really disagree on that one.
Well, there's a huge difference between having a roadmap that you have every intention on doing it and it might take you a little longer, or you're changing things up because you need to, you know, pivot away from certain things, whatever. But there's a whole nother part of that where that those roadmaps that are just developed to create hype, to pump a token, to get dumped, and they have no intention of ever fulfilling anything like that. And that is a slippery slope on trying to make a decision, especially with government regulation, because you know how that shit works, where they're trying to be the ones deciphering that. So I don't necessarily agree that that should be a thing. What I'm saying is just be aware that it could be a thing.
Oh, no, absolutely. And if at the end of the day, if all it does is, like you said, serve as a little bit of a wake-up call to some of these other projects that are just putting out, you know, mindless roadmaps that really aren't going to be going anywhere and stuff like that. Like if it serves that purpose, awesome. If it serves a purpose to make that person who's going to post a shit contract on a network think for a little bit before they hit post or before they complete that transaction, even more perfect. Like that's what it's all about. So I know we're under 10 minutes now. So there's still some, now let's break out of the crypto world a little bit, right? Because, yeah, you know, we pride ourselves to our community about talking about security, internet security, computer security, cybersecurity, you know, all sorts of the security of technology in general. So I know that little Chris, you brought up some stuff right before the podcast. And it's actually pretty interesting. So who in here uses Google Chrome as a browser? I know I do.
I use every browser as a browser.
Okay. How many tabs of Chrome you got open right now?
At least 60.
All right. Little Chris, Zach, you guys be using Chrome or what?
I was just like Chris. I use every browser.
Okay.
No, I only use Chrome. Anything else is garbage to me.
Oh, okay. Well, Lil Chris might have something to tell you about Chrome right now.
Yeah. So I believe
closing my shit right now.
I believe about 3 days ago, a zero-day attack came out for Google Chrome. For those who don't know what a zero-day attack is, it's basically a computer software vulnerability that has no patch or mitigation out there. A hacker can basically exploit it, and there's nothing that can be solved. Fortunately, Google Chrome did find this, and they did release a patch, like basically ASAP. So it's for those who haven't updated Google Chrome browser. I know there's a lot of you guys out there. Please update your Google Chrome just to make sure you're secure.
Yeah, so zero-day attacks are no bueno. Usually they can be exploited for a certain amount of time. They're really scary when it comes to Microsoft, because if you don't know anything about Microsoft, Microsoft has what's called Patch Tuesday. I believe Patch Tuesday is the second Tuesday of every month. And basically that's when they are scheduled to come out with a patch. They really, really, in my my memory serves me correct, they really haven't gone away from that schedule, even if a vulnerability is found. Now, yeah, I would hope that with something like the release of Windows 11, if something absolutely crazy is found, they're going to push a patch as soon as they get a fix for something, if it's absolutely crazy. But for the most part, they stick to that schedule. So like you look at the month of April, the second Tuesday is the 12th. What happens if they come out with an update and then a vulnerability is found the very next day, April 13th, that has nothing to do with the most recent updates or anything like that, right? That means that vulnerability is probably not going to get patched until May 10th. So if you happen to be on a system that is affected by whatever vulnerability is found, you have basically a month where you have left your system vulnerable to this attack, because Microsoft isn't going to patch it until Patch Tuesday. And I could be wrong. Don't quote me on it. Don't go and sit there and say, well, Paul said Microsoft sucks.
Not call him out.
But that's how it is. And it's good on Google for getting a patch out there as soon as humanly possible to help get their browser up to snuff so that people aren't going to be vulnerable to that attack. But it's like, you know, that's the scary thing about a zero-day attack, is it's the vulnerability that's found and there is no fix for it. So that's something crazy to think about in technology and stuff like that. But, you know, so, Chris, I don't know if you want to talk about it a little bit, because yeah. I know you are a security guru, but so, we can talk.
Yeah. So I'm going to stop you there, Paul. So Microsoft actually is good on releasing zero-day attacks. From my experience, when there is a zero, well, I wouldn't say attack, but when there is a zero-day vulnerability, usually release a patch within a day or two.
It shows you how much I pay attention to Microsoft updates.
Yeah, they're very good on that. So I'm actually going to give some tips on keeping yourself secure while browsing the internet. So the first one is obvious, it's obvious, the most obvious, but people still do it. Do not click on suspicious links. If something's offering you, I don't know, a free browser subscription for 12 months, it's more than likely a scam.
Can you send me that link?
Oh, damn. I got some shit to cancel. I'll be right back.
And it also applies to DApps as well. If you see a suspicious DApp link, don't click on it. Don't even connect your wallet. Don't think about it, period. The next one is, it's always there. It's always been there, but a lot of people don't realize it. It's ensure all websites you connect to are secure. The way you can figure this out is your URL field. When you're about to enter the URL, if you're on the website, you should see a lock. If the lock is locked, it means the website is secure. If it's open, it means the connection is not secure. If the connection is not secure and you do not know about that website, you don't trust that website, don't browse on it.
Do not confirm security exception. Do not understand and go past the warnings. No bueno.
Yeah. Unless you do know what you are browsing.
Yeah,
like, and DoD typically, websites, yeah, that typically, none of them have certs.
Yeah. And if it's typically, you know, that's, I'll use the term okay if it's an informational website where it's not asking for financial personal information or transactions or anything like that. But still, that doesn't mean that they're not doing something and installing anything. So don't install anything off those websites, you know, because bad things could happen. But yeah, the risk is lower if it's just an informational website.
Yeah.
So Wikipedia don't have a lock. We're good, right?
I'm not going to say you good, but I'll say you're in a better situation than if, say, like Bank of America didn't have one and you were going to log in with your credentials.
And it was spelled like Bank of America.
Yeah. Bank of America.
So the third one I have is very recently now that you'll see when you connect to a website, it'll be asked what type of cookies that they can store, whether it be accept all, you can manage your own, or decline those cookies. Basically, monitor those. Once again, a website that you don't know, that you don't trust, you might not want to share those cookies with them. If it's a website that you do trust, like Affinity VSC, but we don't collect cookies, that's a website you can trust. It's another way that a website can collect data and possibly use it in a malicious way.
Yeah, we don't like that.
Yeah. The fourth one, it's the most obvious, another obvious one, keep your computer up to date and your web browsers and all the applications you use up to date. I know it's a pain. All of us, except Zach, all worked in IT or phones. We know that people don't update their phones when they're supposed to. It just doesn't happen, but that's a big, huge security risk. Yeah. These updates are important and they're released for a reason. So
yeah, they're called security updates for a reason.
So please update everything, keep up to date. And finally, use a VPN if you're on a insecure network, or even if you are on your own home network.
Bam.
Good stuff.
Well, I hate to say it, guys. I feel like yet again, this hour went by pretty fast because it's 11 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we're not held to the minute, but yeah, we're going to start wrapping things up. I know as we go forward, we might end up running over, maybe do some hour and a half shows, things like that, as we start taking on guests and all that good stuff. But we also don't want to drone on and on for, you know, too long, because hey, let's face it, not everybody wants to sit here and listen to our beautiful voices for more than an hour. Yeah, so just a quick recap on some things too that happened over the week. We have we had that SafeMoon staking pool go live. We had some great progress in mobile apps, some really good marketing things happened. Zach does his wrap up if he wants to quickly mention any of that stuff. That's great. Make sure you check out our website at affinitybsc.com. Every Friday we do updates on Twitter Spaces for Affinity Friday, so check out and follow our Twitter account. It is at AffinityBSC on Twitter. All of our socials are linked on our website, so make sure you check all those out. Anybody else got anything before we end this show?
Not me.
More Affinity.
Yeah. Always.
Not financial advice.
I mean, yeah, I can do that quick recap. No, of course, just, you know, anybody who may have missed Affinity Fridays or anything like that. At least from my side, the biggest thing that happened this week, which truthfully, you know, we've been talking about it for a while now. The company's name is Mobiquity. If you listen to anything, you definitely heard me talk about them. And initially they were just going to essentially run a contextual marketing and our SEO for us, which would obviously broaden our engagement and, you know, open. Wow. I am just fucking way out of it this morning. Just open up eyes to,
you know, exposure. I got doing. You.
Thank you. Yes. Words. Yeah. Exposure. More exposure to new eyes, bring our company to different places. You know, getting outside this echo chamber of Twitter and, you know, Telegram, Discord. You know, obviously I'd like to say we see the same people most of the time, you know, and obviously you meet new people through the same people, but it's a slow road going, and this is definitely a big step in the right direction in that. Also, what's going to happen, this is what we're actually very excited about. So if you don't know about Mobiquity, they are a publicly traded company on the NASDAQ. And what they do is it's digital advertising and data intelligence, right? So essentially they work with a lot of companies that are not just crypto. Actually, their platform was specifically beforehand made for politics. So they worked with political campaigns and stuff of that nature and shoving politics down your throat. Well, these are the guys that did it. So imagine this with Affinity. So with this, as you would know, they do work with other companies for their ad tech, and they need a way to accept crypto. And we just happen to have a platform in which they can do so very easily. So,
oh shit, we do?
Will be bringing on ADAPT as their official payment processing system for crypto. So now anything that they do crypto wise will be running through ADAPT. You know, again, that's anybody. If they want to pay with crypto now, it is now an opportunity for them. And this is huge. And again, they have hundreds, thousands of customers. There's now tens of thousands of customers. This company's been around since 2013. So they got a footing, right? And now that they're finally making this jump into the crypto world, they can reach out to their other people as well and say, hey, this is something that I'm doing, and maybe these are people you should look at as well. So this just opens up more avenues, more than just, you know, the simple retail investor, but also from a business standpoint as well. Very, very, very excited for that. That aside, you know, this week is just another hammering week, you know, trying to secure some more partnerships for us and get ready for this app. You know, everything needs to be lined up and ready to go for this app coming out. As you guys would know, this is like the one thing I've been waiting on personally and in my job. And, you know, I'm no knock to these guys. These guys are very amazing and doing everything that they can, but half of
my marketing job is I need to have a tangible product, right? That's the easiest thing. Just be able to go essentially door knocking, or if anybody we've already talked to, I can go back and talk to them again and say, here's this product. It's way easier to use than what we currently have, right? So when this comes out, floodgates open.
Yeah. Well,
I'll give you my final thoughts, because speaking of tangible products, our good old chief technology officer, little Chris, right before we started this podcast, just sent me the download link for the APK for what we have for the Adapt mobile app on Android so far. So,
I didn't get that.
Well, because you're not technically savvy. You
suck. Oh, damn.
But so just to remind everyone, you know, we're moving pretty well with this. And you know, obviously we didn't do this podcast for update stuff. So I won't get too far into that, because obviously, you know, little Chris will update everybody come next Infinity Friday on our status for the mobile app. But, you know, there is an APK. It's not on the Google Play Store. It's not on the Apple Store, stuff like that. But, you know, we're moving forward to where we're going to have a version of it, at least personally on our phones, that we can sit there and test and tweak and fix stuff and whatnot. So just as a little reminder that we do have our floaty NFT, not to be confused with Frosty's NFTs. We have our floaty NFT line.
Yeah, we're actually giving away money, not taking it.
Exactly. So there's lots of giveaways that come with it. Don't worry about it. I'm sure that you can check pinned Twitter posts, pinned Telegram posts, pinned Discord posts, all about it, that there's giveaways associated with it. But the other perk that comes along with it is if you are the proud owner of a floaty NFT, you are automatically eligible to be a beta tester for when we have the full beta version of the Adapt application available. And if our CTO is sending me an APK to download to put on my phone, I'm not saying that we're super, super close, but we're a whole lot closer to having a beta version ready to go than still being at the drawing board and just writing code for an app. So just a final thoughts there is, if you want to be a beta tester, check out our line of floaty NFTs, pick yourself up one, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're, like Paul said, we're weeks away. And I said this on Infinity Friday, we're weeks away, not months. So we will not have any other beta testers. If you are holding an NFT, that's it. If you're not holding an NFT, you will not be beta testing. You'll have to wait for the full version, but everybody will be eligible for the full version, and you better get it. For me, lastly, I just want to say, thank you for everybody to coming by and listening again. I am going to let, Chris, you got any final thoughts for yourself, buddy?
By the way, I did send you that APK.
Oh, you did?
You need to change your glasses.
And
he don't read his, he I'll don't use his readers when he should.
I'll go look. You didn't send it through like Joel's DMs or nothing, did you? Because I don't read those.
That's rough.
No, but I have nothing else to say.
I kind of figured as much. Yeah.
You should know me.
I know. I know. I get it. No, but this has been great. This is the second episode of many to come from Affinity Protocol. So we once again want to thank everybody that came by to listen live, and those of you that are listening to the recording, you know, please come by. This is every other Sunday that we do these live shows. Try to keep everybody updated, informed, educated, and, you know, just have some good old fun that we don't typically do on our other spaces and things like that. So come hang out, tell your friends about, tell everybody about Affinity and what great things we're doing over here. Tell everybody about crypto, get people involved. This is the future, and it begins with all of us. So on that note, we appreciate you, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
Hell yeah.
Hit us up on Facebook and Twitter.
That's all, folks. Goodbye.